of Cascadia and the edge of the world, Euphemet presents Night Drift with Jim Perry.
From the hinterlands, concealed by fog, broadcasting live from 1150 AM KKNW in Seattle and streaming worldwide at nightdrift.com, thank you for listening. This is an interview series about the unknown and our relationship to it. It's presented by the audio documentary Euphemet, a podcast available wherever you listen to them. It's here that we commune and wander through the big wonder with guests who are thinkers, explorers, experiencers of the phenomena that is on the edge of it all. This is Night Drift, and I'm Jim Perry. Tonight, our guest Les Velez will share stories and discuss OPUS, the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support, as well as describe its mission to reach out and provide help and support to those who have encountered extraordinary paranormal experiences. We'll jump into that conversation here in a few seconds. That's tonight. And like many, you can join the conversation through email. Even after the fact, you can reach through time. Email me at jim@euphemet.com and use hashtag nightdrift on Twitter. You can also now send me a voice message. Just go to sayhi.chat/euphemet or just find a link in the show notes. And right now we're going to go to the phone lines with our guest, Les Velez. Les, obviously, the mainstream media has grabbed a hold of the UAP story. But what we'll talk about tonight is often not covered by those outlets, at least not in any great detail, and not by any fault of the journalists such as Ralph Blumenthal and others who are eager to actually tell the full story of this phenomenon, as it's one that can't really be fully told without including aliens and abduction, can it?
Absolutely correct. And I think what's happening here is a... maybe you want to call it the drip method of trying to bring out such facts to the public. You know, the first step, of course, was to talk about the UAPs, that this is real, this is happening. It's possibly a threat, which I think is probably the tact that would get the most reaction from the federal government. That Lou Elizondo decided to come out with an attack. So, you know, that's the first step. And I think the second step, of course, is to start talking about the fact that we are in a situation where people are in contact with these non-human intelligences. And so that's maybe a big step for people. There's, you know, a conscious dissonance about the fact that we are not alone in the universe. I mean, many people feel that we are not alone in the universe, but then that's as far as it goes. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we have been in contact with these intelligences for eons. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something that... people will eventually come to realize is the truth.
Well, it's a big step for those that are maybe uninitiated. But listen, it's also a big step for these people that are experiencing it and the people that are studying it and are at the forefront of it, such as like yourself. I mean, we're talking about some unbelievable things that are here with us, that are asking to be reckoned with. So I guess firstly, you know, in your experience, and I'll, you know, we'll cover some of your background as well, but right up front here, what are people experiencing out there? What are the characteristics of alien contact that you've found?
Well, I think that the the common thing that you hear all the time is the fact that people are taken from their abode, wherever that may be. They're taken up in either a beam of light or just automatically transferred through their ceiling or through the walls of their house into a craft. And in that craft, they are subjected to various insults to their body, in some way, shape, or form, whether it's taking sperm samples or egg samples or being probed with various types of instruments, which can be obviously very traumatic, a la the Betty and Barney Hill type of a situation that happened in the 60s. But this has been going on for a lot longer time. And unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe, people have considered that maybe demonic in nature or angelic in nature, depending upon the type of situation that has gone on, because many people have had very positive experiences. We recently did a study where 80% of the people did not want these experiences to stop.
Wow.
And so the remaining people, of course, had issues because of their particular type of a situation, and wanted it to stop. So we try to help both people, both types of people, in regards to those types of experiences.
What has been one of the most surprising or startling stories that you can remember in your time of helping abductees and experiencers?
Yeah, you know, there's been so many stories. And I recently wrote a book called The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact, where I have almost 30 stories from people that are in our our totally confidential online support group, where they are able to talk to one another, 24/7. This has been probably the biggest help to these people, because they understand that they're not alone, that their experiences are not uncommon. And so it's difficult to pick out one particular story, but perhaps probably the story that which I write in the book about a couple that had been picnicking in a state park just north of Santa Cruz, California. And they were on their way out of the park at dusk, and they noticed this light over the ocean and got their attention, and it got bigger and bigger until it literally was over their head. And it turned out to be a triangular craft that was about the size of a small Learjet. And this craft proceeded to go into a canyon behind where they were. And they noticed another light over the ocean. And this craft eventually ended up over their heads, and it was another triangular craft, the size of a small Learjet. And the first craft that they noticed, they felt they were looking at it. The second craft, they felt it was looking at them, and they became frightened. And they start to proceed out of the park. And during this process, this trail out of there, and I've been there, is even during the day is difficult to navigate. It's highly vegetated. There's a lot of rocks and things, and they felt like they were floating, and they went out of there to their car. And that's the last thing they remember until 3 hours had passed, and they ended up in a restaurant north of where they were, which is normally only about 5 to 10 minute trip. And they had no recollection of how they got there or what had happened in the interim. So they ended up coming to one of the support groups that Opus had at the time in San Jose, California. And they talked about a rash that they had developed after this incident. And they had taken a picture of it, and they showed it to the people in the group. And almost without exception, they all said that they had a similar rash at one time. And one of the people in the group says, "I think I know what that's from." And so, of course, we asked, "What do you believe it is?" And they said, "It's a reaction to the fluid that they dip you in when they bring you on board the craft." So that was quite a revelation. And so that, to me, was probably one of the seminal type of experiences and events that I had heard you know, with regard to the abduction phenomena. And there's many more, you know, where people have been impregnated, their fetuses are missing. It just goes on and on as far as all these types of events. You can talk about hybrids that people talk about. You can talk about implants. These are all, especially implants, are to me, this is proof of that something is really going on. And the late Dr. Roger Lear did a lot of work with that regard. And so his book, The Alien Scalpel, is a fantastic book and explains, you know, so much about these implants, which are incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's all incredible. It's a great story, and we'll hear more about that and the creation of Opus right here on Night Drift, right after this quick break.
With Jim Perry on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Jim Perry on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle. Now, here again is Jim.
We're back here on Night Drift with Les Velez. We're talking about the alien abduction phenomenon. Listen, it's startling, it's complex. We don't know what's happening, but I do know that there is an experience here that to those who are having it is real. And Les is one of those guys who is trying to help. And sometimes it's about just feeling like you're not alone. So getting back here, why do you believe this is happening? Why do you believe people are experiencing this? I mean, you mentioned a lot about the experiencer themselves having beliefs, you know, potentially for millennia about, you know, is this demonic? Is this angelic? Is this alien? What do you feel is happening here?
Yeah, I think what we're not at the top of the food chain, and that this type of event has been happening as I said earlier, for eons. And I believe that every one of us, this is my latest theory, every one of us has had an experience, whether we consciously remember it or not. And let me tell you a little story about that. One of the meetings that support group meetings that I was involved with, a person in a group said, "I've seen you before." Oh, really? At a UFO conference? At the grocery store? And they said, "No, I saw you on board a craft." And I said, "Really?" And so I kind of blew it off. I didn't think much of it. But it was like a year and a half, 2 years later that someone, totally different person, said to me, "I've seen you on board a craft." And I said, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah, you were sitting on a bench naked and you were freaking out. And they told me to go over to you to calm you down." And so at that point, I decided, OK, I'm going to go get regressed and see if I could possibly find out anything.
Yeah.
Well, in that process, I did not find out anything in that particular regard. However, I had multiple past lives. And then in a subsequent conversation I had with a person, they said that perhaps what was going on is that I was had this experience in a past life. That this person, for whatever reason, was relating. And so that's certainly a possibility, because one of the stories in my book, The Unknown Other, the person talks about the aliens talking about reincarnation and that it's a mechanism of the universe. This is how things operate.
Oh, wow.
And so... you know, it's amazing. If people pick up the book, which you can find on Amazon, and it gives you a lot of insight into not only how OPUS got started, the Organization for Paranormal Understanding is a part, but it also talks about the nuts and bolts type of activity as far as physical aspects and psychological aspects, and the hybridization process, the implants that people go through, and the various studies that we've initiated on experiencers, which we can also talk about at some point.
Wow. And The Unknown Other is such a great title.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that one.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, take me back. Let's go all the way back to where this started to become a part of your life, before MUFON, before OPUS. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Take me back there. What happened?
Yeah. When I was 11 years old, living in Connecticut, I was coming back in the house. It was early evening in October of 1958. And I noticed this object hovering over a tree line near my house. And it wasn't making any noise. And it slowly drifted away, again, totally silently, and scared the crap out of me. I ran in the house and I tried to get my father to come out. And by the time I was able to get him out, it had disappeared. And he said, "Well, it was probably just a beacon of light reflecting off a cloud." And I didn't buy that. I said, no, this is not possible. And so I went to the library and I picked up some books on UFOs. And at the time, George Adamski was the big, famous author at that time.
Sure.
And so I started to read his books and, you know, really got into it for a while. But then, you know, after being 11 years old, I became an adolescent and other things became more important in my life, and graduated from high school and went off to college and became a member of the ROTC at the University of Vermont. Got married right at the end of graduation and went into the service in artillery. I was an artillery officer.
Oh, wow.
And eventually got a job with Procter & Gamble and in Reading, Pennsylvania. And shortly thereafter, I went to work for another company. And in 1985, I moved out to Northern California.
Mm.
to become a member of this manufacturer's rep company, which I'm now a part owner in. So one day I picked up the San Jose Mercury News, which was that's what the name was at that time. Now it's just the Mercury News. And Stanton Friedman was coming to San Jose to talk about UFOs and a government cover-up at San Jose City College. So that was like somebody threw a switch, and it was like, oh, my God, I got to go see this guy. I got to go listen to what he's saying. And so I went there expecting to see a handful of people, and the auditorium was packed. There must have been like 300 people there, which surprised the hell out of me. He gave one of his inimitable lectures. And on the way out, there was a table set up there with MUFON and the Mutual UFO Network. And they have a monthly journal. So I signed up for the monthly journal, became a member. And after a while, it wasn't enough. And so I decided to take their field investigator training. And I became a field investigator. And that's when things really got interesting, because almost without exception, not only were these cases involved with sightings, but also with contact with non-human intelligences.
Yeah. What did your wife think at this point in time?
Well, my wife was really quite supportive in the sense that she didn't tell me I couldn't do any of this.
Yeah.
she believed that, you know, we were not alone in this universe, but that was as far as it went with her.
Yeah.
You know, and there are many people like us that have had spouses that haven't been totally excited about the fact that we're off doing these kind of things.
Right.
But she understood that this was important for me. This was important that, we investigate this kind of thing. So anyway, I guess I was a very lucky guy in that regard. And so these people that I worked with asked me, did I know of other people having similar experiences? And I said, yes, I do. And so the next thing I know, I'm facilitating a support group in San Jose.
Oh, wow.
And that's where I started to, you know, learn a lot about this phenomena, like the story that I mentioned earlier of this couple with the rash and everything. I mean, it was just the kind of stories that just blow you away.
Had you led or facilitated groups that were similar to that? And were you a little bit nervous about being in that scenario?
Well, I think what I did is I knew of a person who was a psychotherapist that I brought in to sit with us during the support group meeting.
Oh,
so I felt comfortable in that regard that, you know, I had a professional there from that kind of standpoint that could understand, you know, what was happening, and that, you know, if we felt that there was a person that probably needed some kind of a psychopathological help, then we could, you know, address that. But the bottom line was that, no, I felt very comfortable for whatever reason. You know, one day I was written up in the Monterey Coast Weekly paper about what I was doing for MUFON. And a woman that was also written up in the article said, I'm in contact with these off-earthly entities, and I'd like to see what's going on with my brain waves. And so when I heard that, I said, I don't have any way of doing anything like that. Out of my realm of expertise. And then she said she was working with an emergency room doctor down in Carmel, California. And I knew of, and so then I got interested because I had a friend, Dr. Eugene Lipson, who was interested in working with other doctors that were aware or interested in the phenomena. And so I called him up and I said, why don't we go down and see this person and see we can find out.
Right.
So we did. And as we walked into her house, there was a picture on the wall, and it was her standing on the back of a large craft somewhere. And I said, so what do you, what, this is, you know, in, as it turned out, in the Caribbean, I said, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm helping these treasure hunters with their quest. And I said, well, how are you doing that? And she says, well, I was in contact with the captain of the galleon that had gone down. So
right away
we that got our attention.
Sure.
And the rest of the afternoon was just totally amazing, because what we found out was that after a near death experience, she became very psychic, and she began to communicate with all these off earthly entities. And so when, you know, she told us things about ourselves that there was no possible way she could know. And so we came away from there saying, how can we possibly help a person like this? And that's when Opus, right, the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support, we founded it in 1994 with Dr. Lipson and myself. And it's a nonprofit 501(c) organization recognized by the IRS, with the main purpose is to educate and help people, support people that are having paranormal experiences.
Yeah. And why was it important for you to do that on your own together with Dr. Lipson, instead of having that within the confines of something like MUFON?
Well, I think MUFON was basically at that point a nuts and bolts type organization. They were not interested in this phenomena at all. Just tell me the shape of the craft, what color it was, you know, how fast it went, you know, things of that nature.
Off you go.
Yeah. And so there was no mechanism. And subsequently, once Opus got going, I contacted, I think this was in 2007, James Carrion, who was the international director of the MUFON organization, and said, you know, you guys are missing the boat and talking to all these people, and you don't have a setup to do it. I said, what, you know, why don't you send me all the calls that you get for help in this nature? And right, that's what happened. And wow, so I started to get all the calls from MUFON, people looking for assistance with their, you know, contact experiences. And that worked very well. And subsequently, they funded a study called the Omega 3 study that and two psychologists worked on, where we took 71 people that were claimed that they had contact with non-human intelligences, and 51 people that were a control group. And we came up with some interesting findings. Now, let me just read you these findings. Quite interesting. In general, abductees' experiences profile differently than do their comparison counterparts on a number of general psychological and specific neurological variables. Yet, there are remarkable similarities between the experiential group and the comparison group. It should be noted that in no case did experiencers or comparison group participants show any signs of mental illness or personality disorder. So there was no...
Important.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very important. Fantasy proneness, which some of our debunkers talk about all the time, does not appear to play a differentiating role between the experiential and the control groups. However, sensitivity to alternative realities and early and recurrent paranormal or psi experiences seem to play a role in the abduction experience.
Oh, man. Incredibly fascinating. We have to take a short break here, and when we get back, we'll continue exploring the Omega 3 study, Opus, and much more, right here on Night Drift with Jim Perry.
back in time. You are listening to the Night Drift Archives by Euphemet.
All right, without wasting any time, let's get right back to the conversation with Les Velez on the alien abduction phenomenon and his organization, Opus. Les, you were reading from the Omega-3 study. Go ahead and just continue where we left off there.
Childhood conflict, psychosocial tension and abuse and trauma more than likely facilitate dissociative coping style in later life. And this dissociative coping style, again, is not a psychopathology. How much a part dissociation plays in the abduction experience remains an open question. And the abuse trauma dissociate pathway remains a viable descriptive, is not an explanatory principle. Both experience with and interest in the abduction phenomena have impact on how one's body is perceived to function, how one views the world and one's purpose in it, and how one defines or redefines one's faith, tradition, and beliefs. In essence, both experience with and interest in contact seems to change one's sense of self and one's worldview. And it's so often when these people come back, they talk about the fact that they're told, hey, you need to be better stewards of the planet. You need to be better to one another. You need to love more. You know, these are all very positive type of statements and types of things that the people are being told. Abduction experiences believe that there is a sentient purpose of alien intelligence at play in their lives and at the work in the world. What intelligence goals are seem to be more beneficent than benevolent, more benign than malignant. You know, and we have these conversations about the fact that, well, you know, there's camps that say, well, they're all bad, and there's camps that say they're all good. Well, I think we have a combination really going on, just like we have here on the planet. We have good people and we have bad people. Yeah. And even you can't even say that within a particular group. I mean, there's been statements about reptilians that, you know, they're all bad. But I've got many stories where people talk about the fact that they've had wonderful relations with them. So again, even within species, you have good ones and you have bad ones. The abductee experience to believe that they're okay, so I just read that part, sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
And the brain generally in the temporal lobes and limbic system more particularly play a mediating role in the anomalous experience such as abduction. This in no way implies that the abductions are all or only in the abductee's head. Rather, it points to the likelihood of temporal ability, in other words, a rapid ability to change and conceive or receive heightened reliability that claims that the brain creates such is not far-fetched, and think that the brain plays an important part in the who and the what of extraordinary experiences and how they are interpreted. In other words, there's something going on different in the brains of these experiences as opposed to the control group. And It's fascinating.
My question would be, would you believe that the data suggests that there was something different in their brain before or during these interactions or experiences, or after as a result of those experiences? What would you?
Yeah, it's the old chicken and the egg scenario, basically, that we have people that have differences in their brain. I think Gary Nolan from Stanford University talked about the fact that in these people that seem to have this psychic ability have differences in the connections between the caudate and the putamen area in the brain. There's a lot more connections with people that are psychic, and it seems to be generational. Was this something that was created, eons ago by these entities? Or is it just a natural effect that has occurred over time? And that's still a question. We don't have answers to a lot of this.
Yeah.
A lot of this is just conjecture as sure. far as what the hell is really yeah. going on.
Very good for podcasts and books, mind you.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, I guess when you look at that data, and excuse me if you're not finished reading the study, because you're free to read more if you'd like. But, you know, when you look at this data, which is amazing, by the way, and confirms a lot of sort of inclinations I've been gathering from the paranormal as in general, as a wide phenomena. But would you believe that data suggests that folks that are experiencers have a unique set of qualifications that allow them to have their doors opened to these things as opportunity? Or do you believe that it presents an opportunity for a participatory experience, a co-created experience that is happening here? Does that make sense?
One of the things that I mentioned early on in the study was the fact that most of these people have had some kind of trauma in early childhood.
Yeah.
Which opens them up to a dissociative characterization. Mm-hmm. And that alone is interesting to me.
Yeah.
That this could be a doorway into these type of situations where they need to have that ability to open up to other things to get them out of the particular situation that they're in.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of this is just something that we are, still puzzling about. We yeah. don't have definitive answers about it. But
sure.
I think that, people always ask, well, why is this happening to me? And in some cases, it's generational, where families are being followed. Generations, mothers, fathers, children, grandchildren are all having experiences like this. And it's almost like they're following an experiment, these entities over generations. It's like we'll pull a dolphin out of the water and we'll measure him, we'll tag him, we'll put an implant in him, we'll take his blood, and then we throw him back in the water. And then a year later, we come back and do the same thing. And I think that's exactly what's happening. That's why I said earlier, we're not at the top of the food chain. I think we're just, the next level down, so to speak. That's why I really believe that we've all had experiences like this, whether or not we consciously remember it.
Yeah.
Like my particular situation where I still don't have any conscious recollection of any of that going on. But then you have two people tell you, that they saw you right. on board a craft, which makes you want to, pause to think a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for all that we don't know about what is happening, we do know that people are experiencing something, right?
Yes.
And because of that, that's something that it's an action item, right? It's something that we can move towards. And that's exactly what you're doing, as I understand, with Opus. How is it that you help individuals that come to you?
Well, one of the things that we found out very early on, that the support group mechanism is extremely helpful. Mm. And we used to have, direct meetings in San Jose for a long time. But then the board kind of moved away. I'm in Texas now, and of course our nonprofit is based out of California. And so we've had to come up with a different way to help people. And so one of the ways we do that is that we do have a support group. It's very active. We have over 300 people, literally from around the world, that are talking to one another 24/7. And it's totally confidential. It's basically a Google group. And so if somebody comes to us, we have a contact button on our website, which is opusnetwork.org. They can request a couple of things. One is to be put into the support group, which again has proved to be probably the best thing for these people, because number one, they know they're not alone, that there are other people having similar circumstances.
That's they so can, important.
Absolutely. And they can ask questions about their experiences, and then they'll get answers in a lot of cases, or opinions. Because one of the things that, you know, we try to maintain is a totally neutral type of atmosphere, non-judgmental, whereby people can feel comfortable telling their story, asking their questions. And, you know, we respect everybody's opinion. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where we don't have the answers to all of this, or even some of it. It's such an unusual phenomena. And so we have to be open to that. And then the latest thing that we've developed is a group called the EST, the Experiencer Support Team, which is a group of people that have incredible background in working with people that have had experiences like this. It's sort of a triage group where they can talk to them and find out if they're looking for other help. And we have a referral network of mental health practitioners, hypnotherapists, that we can recommend tell these people about, so that if they're looking for that kind of assistance, we can also provide that.
Oh, that is great. Wow, that is so cool. Again, the book is The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact. Wow, the existential proposition of alien contact. That just sends your brain down a rabbit hole just really quickly, I think. Les, it's been fantastic having you on Nadrift. I'd love to have you back. There's so much more that we need to talk about, I think. But one more time, where can people reach you, your website again?
Yes. That. Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate being here with you tonight. And yes, people can get a hold of us at opusnetwork.org. And we have contact buttons on there. We have a button where you could order the book if you'd like. We have a lot of articles and documents to help people as well. And a lot of videos of interviews that I've actually done with people like Terry Lovelace and Linda Moulton Howe and Yvonne Smith and people like that. So, matter of fact, Linda Moulton Howe and Yvonne Smith and Terry are all on our advisory board. They're great people to have on board.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Les. Appreciate talking with you tonight.
Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate it very much.
follow Night Drift with Jim Perry on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes.